The Desert Healthcare District and Foundation presents a podcast that supports your health and wellness where you live. This is Healthy Desert, Healthy You, hosted by Will Dean. Now, here's Will.
Hello, friends. Today, my guest is Andrea Vidauri, who is a policy analyst, advocate, and co-founder of the People's Collective for Environmental Justice, which is a community-based organization focused on fighting environmental racism and finding solutions through community work. Andrea grew up in the Inland Empire and has been prestigiously awarded for her work, which I'll get into a little bit later. But first, I want to also say that Andrea has agreed to be the keynote speaker at the second annual Healthy Desert, Healthy You Environmental Health Summit, presented by the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation, September 11 and 12, here in the Coachella Valley. So thank you for that, Andrea, and welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So I want to get right into your work and what I understand about it. I know that you advocate for the reduction of harmful rail and truck emissions in California. And something I read that I found really striking and interesting, I read that in our region, the Inland Empire and the Coachella Valley, that there are about 500,000 freight trucks that travel through our region every day. Is that right?
That is right. And it's could be possibly on the lower end, too, which is really wild. That number comes from every time a truck is driving into a warehouse, into a rail yard, into an airport, and then out. And so there's all these back and forth trips that happen. And it sounds like a lot, because it is a lot, but it makes sense because of the kind of what the region has grown into over the last two decades. I mean, this is the largest logistics hub on the West Coast, right? Like, what? So much of the country depends on our little region. So in a way, it makes sense. I mean, we're literally supplying stuff for like 40% of the United States, right? 40% right. Comes in through here. So it needs a lot of infrastructure.
Yes. And when you think about the emissions from that number of vehicles, and not to mention rail, that's really shocking.
It's huge. It's huge. Yeah. I mean, it's the leading pollution source that we have in the region is these truck trips. I mean, even because a truck is mostly moving with diesel, it's way different than a car. We might have bunch more cars on the road, but the impact of one truck is equal to a bunch of cars. So the fact that we have so many of them really does impact the region. And also, as you guys know, we live in a valley. And so geographically, we also are not, we're also in a place that doesn't help, right? It doesn't help with the dispersion of all of that pollution.
Right. Because what is here is often contained here for longer periods than it would be elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about the health impacts because I watched a video where you were talking about the region and the impact, and you mentioned two terms that I hadn't heard before, and I wanted you to elaborate on them. One was diesel deaths, and the other was cancer clusters. Would you explain those?
Yeah, they're not happy terms to talk about, but they're very real. The first one being this idea of a diesel death zone, which and cancer clusters with both come from the medical community. A diesel death zone is an area where there is such high levels of diesel that people in the area, life expectancy is shorter. They have higher chances of having asthma, cardiovascular, respiratory issues. And we have these types of diesel death zones all over the region and all over California.
Right.
Where we know these zip codes, folks are living maybe 8 to 10 years younger than the rest of the population, which is unnecessary, can be avoided, completely avoidable, but isn't. And then the other one being cancer clusters, which is something that I learned about when I started getting into this work. And I read up on studies that were done over by the rail yard in San Bernardino, the BNSF yard, and they did a public health study there. And they were able to see that there are cancer clusters there, which, you know, you read it on paper, but then, you know, our organization also organizes in that community. And so anecdotally, you also hear about like every other house have had some type of cancer in their family and maybe haven't never smoked a day in their life. right? So even anecdotally, you hear about these things. So these are the two terms. And we know that it comes from the air pollution outside. And even though some people say like, oh, the air is way better than it was back in the 70s, right? We hear that a lot. The particulates are way smaller now. So they really can seep in through your skin, through your nose, through, you know, through different parts of your body. People all across the region are affected by it.
I wanted to clarify something you said. When you said 8 to 10 years, you were talking about a shorter life expectancy, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's data from like our county, right? That there are certain zip codes throughout the region that, yeah, their life expectancy can be 8 to 10 years less than someone that lives in a community that might not be close to these carcinogens that come out of diesel. Because we know that diesel is a known carcinogen. So it's like someone unintentionally smoking a pack a day or something like that.
Right. So when we talk about the proximity to this pollution, there are a couple of terms that I know that are very familiar to the People's Collective, one being environmental racism and environmental justice. How do they factor into addressing these hazardous emissions?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the fight here is for environmental justice, right? The fight here is that no matter where you live, what skin color you are, what ethnic background or place you come from, like you should have the same life expectancy as anybody else, right? That shouldn't determine, right, your life. So that's what the fight is, because so many of our communities are living under environmental racism, right? Which I think most people can understand. I think structural racism, we know it still exists in the way that zoning happens, the way that loans happen, the way that, you know, cities are built and created. But we know that that still exists, right? We know that there is disinvestment sometimes in certain communities of color, and there's more investment in others. And so that also trickles down to our health, right, and our environment. And so we know that it is a lot more likely if you're a person of color, you're going to be living next to a freeway. You're going to be living next to a place that pollutes, a recycler, you know, a sewage plant, et cetera. And in the region, we have the data that does show that. You know, especially because our region is so highly Latino, like we know that Latinos, like 60% of them live like 500 feet from a warehouse or something, right? Like that's a lot.
And that's very close, right?
Yeah, that's incredibly close, right? That's like throwing a rock over and it's right there. Yeah. So anyways, that the problem is very pervasive still in the region. And I think that's something that the collective is trying to address along with our community.
So let's talk about the regulations that you're advocating for and how they would change our exposure to trucking and rail emissions. Are you going for a certain, you want to reduce the transportation vehicles? No.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one because like I mentioned in the beginning, you know, we are one of the hearts of the logistics industry. My parents and family all work in the industry and know how important it is. It puts food on a lot of people's tables. I get it. But it's also the fact that we have like almost oversaturated the region with this one industry. And so there are negative impacts that do come with that. And we see it, one, in our health and second, in our air quality. And so one of the fights that we have is like, okay, for the industry that is here, how are we making sure there's a just transition, right? We talk a lot about, because of climate change, we need a just transition off of fossil fuels. It is no different for the transportation sector and how we move our things. There's no reason why the way we move our things, because it benefits everybody, right? Everyone shops online. Everyone has things in their stores, but only a couple people have to kind of like bear the brunt for everyone to have that. And so we think it's very logical that we find a way to transport our goods in a way that's safe for everyone, since everyone benefits from it. So some of our fights have been like, how do we transition the rail system into an electric one, which, by the way, exists in almost every part of the world, but just doesn't exist here. And then the other one is on the trucking end, right? Like, how do we make sure there's a just transition for truckers, where the state is supporting this transition off of diesel into electric? And that one's more of an emerging market, but it is being successful in places in Asia and places in Europe where we are seeing things being moved by electric. And so how is that? How can we bring that here? I think is one of the things we're trying to do to at least deal with the industry that's here. There is a responsibility to clean it up. Now, on the other end, there's just this idea of growth, and there's a lot of the growth. We really, I think, as a whole community in the Inland Empire, all the way from the West Valley into the desert, have to think about, like, what are we investing in? You know, how is that going to trickle down to our communities? Is this the type of industry we want to put all of our eggs into? You know, those are also conversations I think we think about. And if we are going to keep growing this industry, how do we do it in a way that's safe, right? Because there's only so many lanes you can widen on a freeway, right? There's only so, you know, there's only so much land. And so that's the other piece, I think, of the work.
Right. So the conversion to green technology and electric vehicles, that's a very important part of this. Where do we stand now in terms of making the change? Have there been any inroads or?
I mean, we were like, I would say we were in like our highest momentum about 2 years ago when the state of California passed these really two great laws, which would require the rail companies to start taking out their dirty trains and start investing in new ones. And then likewise, on the truck sector, there was a law that was passed that was going to make these big truck companies that have 50 or more trucks, that they were going to have to start converting them to electric, right? Like the Amazons, the FedEx, the Home Depots, et cetera, right? People that have the money to do it. And unfortunately, because of the new administration, there's no belief in climate change or anything like that, right? Like these, they have attacked these rules completely and are even trying to go after some rules that have been passed already, which state of California is saying that's illegal to do. That doesn't matter right now. So there's a big attack on anything climate, environmental justice related, as we all know. And so I would say we are at a pause. The momentum has slowed down a lot. But, you know, just last week, the California Air Resources Board, because of the governor's office in California, issued like this report saying this is how California is going to move despite what's going on in the federal government, right? Like they doubled down on their commitment saying that we're still going to go after policies like this. We're going to find ways to invest in this technology so that companies can still transition. And so that's where we're in. Of course, you know, I would say I'm a little skeptical to see how urgent we're going to do it, because I think there's a big urgency matter here. Like I mentioned before, like how many more years are we going to wait for people to finally see relief? That's key, right? And so that's where we're at. There's a little bit of a slowdown in momentum, but I wouldn't say that the fight is like dead or anything.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll have more with Andrea Vidauri when we return after this message.
The air we breathe, the water we drink, and the land we live on are essential parts of living a thriving, healthy life here in the Coachella Valley. That's why the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation, with community partners, will present the second annual Healthy Desert, Healthy You Environmental Health Summit on September 11 and 12, 2025, at the Westin Mission Hills Resort in Rancho Mirage. We are bringing together environmental advocates, health experts, community leaders, and concerned residents like you to explore solutions to the environmental challenges we face. Join the conversation. Register today for this free event at healthydeserthealthyyou.com.
So we are back with Andrea Vidauri. Andrea, I wanted to talk a little bit about the solutions to this issue. I'm wondering if community involvement in development is part of that. Is that a component of resolving these issues?
Like engaging community? Yeah, like outreaching.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Of course. Yeah, of course. You know, that's something that I think, you know, our organization has tried to do is make sure that public policy includes people, right? Like public policy isn't supposed to be something that's kept in an ivory tower or for people that can access politicians in Sacramento. Like that's not the case. Like everyone should be able to access policymakers and being able to advocate for what they are, because community members are experts. People living next to the rail lines, to the freeways, to the truck yards, they are experts in their own experience as much as any scientist that comes in to test the air, as much as any lawyer that comes in or economist, right? I think they're the best ones to tell us how strong or urgent a policy is. And so I think in the past couple of years, we've seen a lot of community members in the Inland Empire engage in public policy, not only at the state level, but also at the national level and even at the local level, right? What we always see community members engaging their local city councils, saying we need better protections for communities. We need the cities to invest in this transition. We need the state to step up. Yeah, this region actually is, like, I would say, one of the leading regions in the whole country around this transition. I mean, our air district was one of the first ones to pass a really strong policy around warehouses across the whole country. And now there's other states that are trying to copy what's happening here, right? Other parts of California are trying to copy what's happening here. And that would not have happened if it wasn't for community members that take time out of their day, out of work, to go to these places of power and talk about what's wrong, what the issues, what is wrong, and what is it that they want to see.
Right. So for people who are listening and who want to get involved, who want to learn about it, who want to take steps to correct this, what would you advise they do? What's, like, a first step?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step is to just, like, get informed and find people that are thinking like you, you know, find people that are also worried about what you're worried about. You'd be surprised, like, attending a city council meeting or a county, finding your like-minded people, joining organizations. There's a bunch of resources online. But I just think that's the way to start, right? Like, how do you connect with other people that are thinking like you? Because there are all over the valley, all over in the desert and into the West Valley, there are people everywhere talking about, like, how can they make the Inland Empire better, right? Because that's what it's about. It's not like it's against something. It's like, it's about how do you make the Inland Empire better?
Absolutely. So, and I would imagine that the People's Collective website is also another great resource for residents.
Yeah, thanks for that. PC4EJ, the number 4.org. You can find us. We have a newsletter that you can sign on to get updates. And then there's a bunch of resources there, too.
I want to shift gears a little bit and congratulate you on your two most recent honors, the 2024 Goldman Environmental Prize in the North America and Time Magazine's 2025 100 Most Influential People. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a mouthful, but yeah, it was a wild year. Yeah, it was kind of a crazy year. It was kind of hard to celebrate too, because we also got this new administration that was like, "Yeah, we're not going to do any of that." But yeah, it feels really special to have the work that's been done in the region recognized, because I just feel like there's so much happening in the Inland Empire that goes unnoticed and under-recognized. And I think is the most special part, because it felt like an award for me, but it was more so an award for everyone that's been doing this work for such a long time.
Right. Yeah. And it's very well deserved. I'm going to go back a little bit to your upbringing and just find out, when did you first become aware of these issues and become involved? Was it something people were talking about in your family, at school?
No, not at all. I think it's like an experience a lot of us have growing up in the region, is like things just become very normalized. You're not really thinking about the stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, my house is right next to a truck route, like, and I see them all the time. Like, my parents work at these industrial places. Like, that's normal and totally fine. It wasn't until I was in college and I learned about the term environmental justice, because I think it was there was a local community organization in the region that had gone and done a presentation at my university and talked about what environmental justice was and this fight that was happening in Mira Loma, which is in Jurupa Valley. And I was like, wait a minute, I know that struggle. Like, I was like, I grew up in an area like that. And that kind of, you know, just became like that wormhole I kind of kept digging into that I got really interested in. And I had a lot of mentors, that people that have been doing this work for a lot longer than I have, that I felt like brought me in and, you know, presented me to other people that were like-minded, that wanted to do stuff. And I got really fascinated by, like, well, when were these decisions being made, and trying to understand what a city council was and how does it work, and reading my local newspaper for the first time. Like, you know, these are all things that I didn't grow up with in my home. My family's not really politically engaged. They're immigrants from Peru. They, like, you know, came here to work, do their thing, live a good life. You know, they're not trying to rock the boat or anything. So I didn't grow up with that. But definitely finding people that were like-minded helps me understand what was going on, and starting to realize, like, oh man, these decisions happened like 20 years ago. I was like 5 years old when this was happening, right? Like, when decisions to change the neighborhood were happening. So it just kind of became something a little addicting to think about and explore.
What would you say to a young person, a high school student, a college student, to maybe inspire them to begin to think about it, to get involved? Because I find that young people are very effective, not to say that older people aren't, but young people are especially effective in advocating for different things that affect their future.
They are, and they're so impressive all the time. Like, I always wish I would have been like the youth of today back when I was younger. Because I definitely did not have that bravery that they do, you know, like they're willing to say anything. But yeah, I think my advice is that you're an expert just like everyone else. And that just because you're young doesn't mean that you don't know anything less. And these rooms that, like, you know, a lot of suit and tie and a lot of older folks, doesn't matter. Like, go disrupt that space and say what you're feeling. I think that's really important. I started doing this work when I was like around 21 years old. So I was still pretty young too. And I feel like that was my biggest barrier, was just that imposter syndrome of like, can I go into this space and express how I feel? And I think I had enough people that encouraged me to that I did. And I think that's what I would encourage folks to be like, don't be scared to say what you're feeling. And people have to respond to you. I think your electeds and your local, you know, people that make decisions about your life, they are accountable to you. So you should, make them answer your question.
That is great advice. So my last question, I know, as I stated earlier, that you're going to be at the Healthy Desert, Healthy You Environmental Health Summit, September 2025. What else is next for the People's Collective for Environmental Justice?
What is next? Well, we are mostly in San Bernardino County. We have programming, really cool programming throughout the year, either if it's on a film screening or an eco market, or if not, theater or art shows, whatever it might be. There's a lot of programming that we have that we invite anyone to. It's like a fun way to like get involved and think about these really heavy topics in a way that also lets you be creative about it and lets you find people that, you know, care about the same thing you do. And then I would say the other thing that we're headed to is like, how do we keep this fight up? Just because we're living under, you know, this Trump administration who doesn't believe in science doesn't mean we're going to stop. And so you'll still see us heavily in our cities, heavily at the Air District, and we'll still be heavily pushing at the national and state level around the things that we believe need to happen. So I think you're not going to see us shut up anytime soon.
And we are grateful for that. So Andrea, one more time, the website?
It's www.pc4ej.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Healthy Desert, Healthy You. This podcast is a production of the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation in Palm Springs, California. For more information, please visit the website dhcd.org. Our annual conference site is healthydeserthealthyyou.com. This podcast is available at most major podcast portals, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Captivate.fm, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe.